Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away. So it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is happening, all my woods people, or people of the corn, I should say, right now? We are driving through corn country. My goodness. It is just corny around here, especially hanging out with you, Tyler.
Eric's heart is in butterfly status right now, dude.
He's in the back seat thinking about sweet corn, sour corn, field corn, all the corns.
You'd think he was sitting center field at a Texas Rangers game, you know?
There's our first Runza, too.
Oh, my goodness.
If you know what that means, you know what state we're driving through. Because Runzas are very particular. They are the state food of one state, the state dish, I guess you should say. And they also are the name of a fast food restaurant that I believe is only in a few states, but there's one that has most of them. And we're going to be doing a little whitetail hunting up here, a little bit of sniffling as well. I think Eric got us all sick back in early September, and nobody's been well since. That's what happens when you go home to Illinois and bring back the sickness to Texas. You don't even know we're talking about him because he's on his headphones.
He's tired of hearing you. In fact,
I bet.
He's really tired of hearing you.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, man. He's going to get real tired of hearing me whenever I film him shoot his deer up here. So
yeah, party.
That's right, dude. We're going to party like it's 2023. Michael wouldn't understand that joke.
No.
So we got the whole crew. We got a follow truck. And then we got the truck we're in right now. We're going doing some deer hunting, but we have been doing some elk hunting. At least a lot of us have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of y'all have.
Tyler's been holding it down on the Rut Fresh podcast. If you haven't been listening to that, you should. It's not very ruddy right now, but that just means that the only way to go from here is up.
That's right,
know?
Man.
Yeah. But it is a great place to get some up-to-the-date information about what's going on in the whitetail woods. And if you didn't know, that releases the same day as this podcast on the Wired to Hunt feed, so you can go over there and support your favorite Yankee friend Mark Kenyon and your favorite Texan friends Casey and Tyler all at the same time by listening to the Rut Fresh podcast.
Man, what a dadgum just union of people. You
it
know?
Is, like, man. The North and the South, man.
Bringing people together. that's what we do, man.
Yeah, just like Abraham Lincoln, right? Just bringing them all together.
That's right, man.
Yeah, anyways. Yeah.
Bill Clinton, you know what I mean?
That's right, just a man of the people.
That's it.
I did not inhale.
did you say not inhale?
Yeah, not inhale. Harold, what's the other one?
David.
David.
David Knight and Harold Hale or something. David Hale and Harold Knight. That's it.
I think it's it. Yeah, that's right. Classics, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So classic, they don't even, I don't even know if they're around anymore.
I think they rode off in the sunset.
I don't blame them.
Yeah. They sold. Their business is owned by a conglomerate now. Oh, gotcha. And it's getting revamped from what I understand, which cool. I don't blame them.
Yeah.
You know, retire, just go hunt you a dadgum food plot in the middle of the pines for the rest of your life, shoot turkeys,
man.
Call them in.
Sounds good.
Sounds pretty nice. But we have been doing some elk hunting, and elk hunting is one of the things that I tend to think that I enjoy. Sometimes I think differently, though.
Yeah.
It can be tough.
Yeah. It
and
can.
In a lot of different ways.
I don't even like it. I can tell you that right off the bat.
Yeah,
right,
I can tell now, you don't like it.
I don't like elk hunting. I would like to shoot an elk. I would love to hunt an elk when they're bugling pretty much every day. But
yeah.
I just don't like sitting in the mountains with nothing to do, not knowing if I should go north, south, east, or west.
Well.
Not knowing what they would be doing at the time. I feel like in whitetail country, I can figure something out to do and give myself a decent chance.
Like the elk hunting we did.
Yeah.
Because they bugled every day, morning and evening, and then towards the end of the hunt, every day, about near all day. And then you got to go back to the place you were staying midday and eat a bite,
chips
get some work
and salsa,
done,
baby.
And take a nap. Eric's first priority was nap, then eat. Like, one day he didn't eat lunch until 2:30 because he napped before.
No, sir.
He was so tired.
I'm eating and napping.
Yeah. We did this thing called community nap a little bit, which is not near as weird as it sounds. Look at all this corn flying out of the truck.
I bet you Michael did not like that.
Well, we...
Y'all had a California King.
No. A couch and a recliner and a reclining couch, you know. You can get a nice community nap done. But we were tired. Because one of the things that was weird about the unit that we hunted, I'm not going to tell y'all where it's at or anything, but it's a really good elk unit. Lots and lots and lots of elk.
Can you teach a class, a master class on how to draw those tags?
Yeah. You use... the email whitehousepresssecretary.gov and they will respond to you and give you a tag every year.
Governor's tag.
That's
what they call
it. Governor's tag.
Yeah.
So it's you know, it's not like what you would call in general, not what you'd call top tier, because it's not as high a trophy quality as some of these other units, but it's got a lot of elk and there are some nice elk in the unit. But the weird thing is it's kind of around town and the unit's kind of spread out where the public is and stuff. So it's not like a great, like drive in there a long ways and camp type unit.
Yeah.
You kind of just stay in a place. Now you could have camped and we didn't because y'all already know us. We like to just be fat and lazy, but no, actually we actually didn't camp because we film all our stuff and y'all know that. So, when you do that kind of thing, you kind of need a home base that's maybe a little bit better than a tent, or at least we like to do it that way. That way we can produce some pretty nice footage and be able to drop footage, recharge batteries, eat good meals. Like, all these things help a ton, and they give you, like, better energy. I'd rather get, like, 5 solid hours of sleep at night than 7 of, like, feeling a rock underneath my hip, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, all that to say is we did a little house stand while we were there, but it was extremely good hunting and kind of weird. It was a different experience because there were elk around everywhere. So I found myself not really passing elk, but passing opportunities to go after certain elk because I've killed a few bulls in my life, not near enough yet, but this was an opportunity where I'd get to go around and kind of hunt up a big bull if I wanted to, and I spent a lot of time trying to do that, and I saw some pretty good ones.
Well, you know, we were looking at some footage earlier before you got in the truck, and I saw video of a 7x6 that was pretty impressive.
I'm trying to think of which one that is.
He had a 7th on his left side.
Is that the one that was going nuts on the
He was raking a tree.
Raking a tree. Yep. Yeah, he had the kind of the orange-colored antlers.
Yeah, he was heavy and just nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that was a big bull. That's that was real sad to see him run off.
I was, too. In fact, I thought that he wouldn't. I thought that I was going to kill that bull.
Was he was coming to Greg?
Raking, yes.
Greg was raking.
So our setup was me and three of the dudes with cameras, but Greg was kind of a flex camera slash rake guy. Now, nobody else knows how to call elk, at least from what I understand.
That's your bane, dude.
It is, man.
You don't have any other callers.
I've been trying to get somebody else to draw an elk tag so I could call one in for them, and it hasn't happened yet.
We're probably going to be way more successful when you don't have the tag.
Well, I'd like to.
Not just because you can call them past us,
and,
you know?
Yeah, it's exactly right. If you don't know this about elk, they just have this innate ability, kind of like a turkey, which is a very common comparison, to come into like 80 yards and just be like, where's that thing I hear? And so the best tactic is to have a caller that's 40, 50 yards behind you, and to get that elk to come up there and look, and he'll be 20 yards from the hunter and looking back there at the caller. And that situation played itself out a few times on this trip. We raked in three bulls, and all three times the elk stayed about 100 yards from the guy raking in those situations. So raking means nobody can go in our group, or nobody can go and call in with a cow, but anybody can take a big old limb and whack it up against this tree and make it sound like an elk is rubbing on a tree. You know, raking essentially is rubbing from the whitetail's perspective. So, and it's pretty effective on elk, especially like in that September 17th through 21st type range. It's really effective because that's when everybody's kind of like working out the pecking order hardcore. So the bulls are real interested to see who else is being aggressive. And now once you get a little bit past that time period, they kind of get things established, and you get in kind of more of that herd bull, satellite bull type situation. That's at least my experience, you know. Like, it's going to be state dependent as well. But we raked in three bulls, and I played it pretty conservative on all of them, and I got a shot at one of those bulls. And I wish, looking back now, that I would be more aggressive in those situations. But I just feel like you got a bull at like 65 yards, and you're raking, and then he comes in and goes to raking too, that he's going to go ahead once he's done and come closer, and that just doesn't seem to actually be the case.
Is he communicating with that rake when he's doing that?
I think so. I think
he's like kind of saying, like, hey, where are you at? I'd like to not get just, you know, run over by a toad or whatever.
I think that's what it is. I think he's saying, I'm bad to the bone. You come over here and mess with me. And we actually saw that. One of the first mornings we were there, I like kind of stalked in on a bull without doing any calling, but bumped some cows, which cows are always a problem. If you can find a bull elk that you want to shoot that ain't got no cows, you're going to kill him. But in this situation, there's a bunch of cows around this bull. We're trying to stalk in on him, bumped a few cows, and it's not like it just messed everything up, but everybody split. They all got kind of discombobulated. And this bull then start bugling at. He runs up the hill and goes to raking up on top of the hill. Well, then we see that 7x6 you're talking about and run up the hill to him. This is like 4 or 5 days before we saw him that time. And they commenced to having a huge fight on top of the hill because that other bull was raking. So I think that's the thing. Whenever a bull rakes, I think he's telling the other bull, hey, come over here because I'm bad to the bone and you don't want none of this.
Hmm.
So whenever a bull comes into raking and goes to raking too, I believe, just from what I've watched, that is him saying, this is my boundary. Come push it if you want to. Because I have yet to see a bull one time I saw it happen, but it was a younger bull. Rake and then come closer. They almost always rake and rake and rake, and then it's like they remember, oh, my cows are over there. I'm going to go back over there now or something. Mm-hmm. But the first one we raked in was probably the biggest scoring bull of the trip. and he was down in some of that juniper country, and there wasn't as many elk around, and he was raking it like 45 yards, but we couldn't see him, and it was getting kind of late, but we had like some trails coming right down to where we were. They were raking behind me about 20 yards. I was like, oh, he's about to just give me a frontal right here at 20 yards. And then between the bugling and the raking, we called in a satellite bull as well, who came in and made the whole situation weird and just kind of busted things up. Mm. It's like he surprised that big bull. And this bull was like probably a 340-plus type bull, a monster. And after that, that bull got kind of weird. It was like, wait, where's my cows? And he ran up the hill, and I tried to push up and passed a shot at 40 yards through kind of a tight window when it was pretty late. I just didn't want to just be flinging arrows, you know, so kind of played that conservative, and it didn't pay off. But I thought that maybe we would end up back over there and kill that bull later in the week, you know, so there wasn't a lot of pressure around. It's a big unit, not a ton of hunters, so you kind of felt good about there not being too many dudes around. But lo and behold, the next day there were some dudes in that area, and that we never ended up going back there after that. So not because I felt like they completely ruined it, but about near anywhere you went, you could go find elk. So it's like, well, why? There's no reason to go over here and try to compete with these guys when I can go over here and have as good a hunt and not see anybody. Mm-hmm. So the next bull that we raked in, didn't do any calling to him, just raking. We saw him and went to raking and saw him coming to us. So I ran down the hill about 60 yards and got set up. And that bull came in on a string to the rake and got so close that it scared me. not literally, but he got really close. And it's one of those situations where I don't really know what happened, but sometimes when you're filming hunts, there's just kind of too many Sasquatches standing around, and he saw something he didn't like, and he wheeled out to, he was at like 20, wheeled out to 45, and I had a pin set for that, so I took my shot and hit one of very few branches that was even possible to hit, and it just deflected my arrow and didn't kill him. He ran off. Mm. Very sad. A very sad time. And then that last one you were just talking about was the other bull that we raked in, the big 6x7. He kind of almost looks like a fallow deer, like on one side. He's got like his little palmation type thing going on. He's a monster. His fronts were huge, which is pretty cool. I actually, personally, when I think about elk, I like big fourths and fifths, you know, like the back ends. Me That's too. What I want to see. But a lot of times you see, especially kind of more in the southern U.S., the high scorers are the ones with big fronts. Because, you know, you can see an elk that looks big, but his fronts are only 11 inches. Well, if you put 16 or 17 on all five of the or six of those fronts, that's a lot more score.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, that's
were those all in the same type of country?
a lot of them were. So there was some that were in a burn, and then there was some that were in like a P&J, which means pinyon and juniper country, which is maybe like what you might more consider like scrub brush. It looks kind of like the Texas hill country, you know. But the concentration of elk were up in that kind of burn, higher ground type stuff. That's where it seemed that there were more elk in that stuff. But we did have – there was some areas where there seemed to be not as many elk, and that was kind of in the thicker timber stuff. And I think that's actually because they can spread out. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, when you're in the burn, there's a lot of food, so there's a lot of elk around, but they kind of concentrate during the day because they want to go to the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, whenever you just have a copious amount of cover, they can go by near anywhere they want to.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of spreads them out, but
so. Oh, that was cool.
What was that?
I was a hawk just went like 2 foot off the ground across the road in front of us. So did you? I mean, do you feel like that the main key factor was not having a caller? they could call behind you? Or do you feel like the raking was effective enough, it just was situational that it, and just kind of a, it just happened to be an issue that you couldn't get the right shots that you wanted or whatever? Or is there something you could have done with that raking setup that would have better helped you?
I'm still learning how to elk hunt some, you know, and I think that that's kind of how it goes about here, any hunting. But I would say I got a lot more experience whitetail hunting than I do elk for a couple reasons. We can hunt whitetails for 3 months out of the year in most states, and then elk you can kind of do the thing about 1 month of the year in very few states, especially when you're an out-of-stater. They don't like to let you go there very often. So all that being said, I think that honestly raking is like a lot more effective than what I once thought it was. I think it's like the thing, because I think it's the most realistic thing you can do that doesn't sound like a hunter. Whereas like bugling, it's pretty hard to sound like they do. They just sound so cool. And I used that Phelps amp and one of those tubes, and they work good, and I called bulls in with them, but you just know that the sound is different because I'm not a 800 pound animal with a chest the size of a 55 gallon drum, you know, like I just can't go do the guttural things that they can do. So I think that the raking is like possibly the way, but I think you got to learn how to hunt in accordance with the raking. You know what I mean? Like I, most of the times with the raking, I wasn't aggressive enough. Like that big bull you were just talking about. If I would have, while he raked, if I just would have took about 10 steps forward, I would have had a clear shot at like 55 yards and just could have shot him. And when they're doing that, they are so concerned with what they're doing that they don't give a hoot, because he is just peeing all over himself and being a wild maniac on a tree. He's not worried about these two stumps that are barely moving closer, you know. So, yeah, I think the raking is the thing. And truth be told, too, not to, like, oust the dudes or anything, because they did a good job. But just in general, it's hard to film an elk hunt, and it's hard to hide more than one guy on the ground in most situations. And I think that, like, there was two or three situations where if it was just me, I probably would have killed. And because we were trying to film stuff, it something messed up or whatever, and it's just how it goes. I mean, it's just one of the sacrifices that you make doing this thing. And I joked with you, kind of joked at least, that the next time I draw a good tag, y'all might have to really work on convincing me to film it, because I would like to just go kill one of these big suckers one of these days. But it is fun to film it, and I'm glad that we do. But at the same time, man, like there's another situation where we had glassed elk and bedded them in a small pocket of timber. And I say small, I mean like 1 acre or less of timber. And so we just know where they're at, right? And we made a big old mile and a half loop around to come up over the edge of this mountain right there on the ridge where they were. And we played it perfect, except there was this calf that got up while we were doing that and fed up to kind of the top of the ridge. So whenever we peeked around, there she was at 20 looking at us, and everybody had to just go into mannequin mode. And
they told me this story earlier.
You can only hold this so long. And I'm not going to say which one, but one of the toughest guys on our crew finally had his leg just completely go out on him, and he made a huge noise. And this is after standing there like probably 20 minutes, you know. We'd watched this giant 6x5 come out at 45 yards, and he like didn't give me a shot at all through a bunch of like dead timber. And it was just killing me, you know, because 45 yards just feels like in the wheelhouse and no shots. Well, he goes out, herds some cows back in, brings them back in. Then we see him down here at like 60 yards raking a little bit lower down the hill. And it's just like, oh, it's just a matter of time before he comes up here and gets his calf. Well, in all that, she's kind of come aware of our presence even more, because I draw when he comes out at 45, you know, kind of like, okay, heck with her, you know, I'm about to shoot him. Well, I didn't get a shot, and then all of a sudden she's like, why did that stump do that, you know? And so I let down or whatever. She's she's fine, but she's like kind of eating and looking at us the whole time. And we're still kind of stationary, you know. And finally the leg goes out and a rock goes rolling down the hill, and then everybody kind of really freaks out and just does the antelope stare at us for about 10 minutes. And then I can't remember what happened. I think I decided to try to draw and get a shot because everybody was kind of about to break, and just I couldn't get a shot off on that thing. Yeah.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
But, so would you take... okay. Let me just set this question up with a scenario.
Okay.
Thing. In 2017,
uh-huh.
you and I went on an elk hunt together.
Uh-huh.
You'd killed an elk before on OTC in Colorado the year before. And so in 2017, we go on a hunt together, and we're thinking, we're about to get this done. It's going to be awesome. You know,
yep.
KC's got this thing figured out. We go, and we make a video called Spiked Out, because you can't shoot a spike in Colorado. And we saw so many spikes. We had them just... all over us in bow range.
We spiked out one time this hunt, too.
Did you?
Did
really?
They tell you about it?
Uh-uh.
Oh, it's like 4 yards.
Really?
Yeah, it's cool footage.
Oh,
yeah.
I can't wait to see that. Well, so we make that video, and in the video, you can see it if you watched it. It's an older video. This kind of smaller 4 or 5 point comes out. We had made this big calling sequence, and we were breaking limbs and just making, you know, making it sound like a big old herd bull was just doing his thing and breaking stuff, right? And then we just sat down on stumps and got still for like 15 minutes, right? And then all of a sudden you kind of hit, 15, like a legit 15 minutes later, you hit a couple of just quick little mews or whatever. And all of a sudden we kind of hear something and see something at the same time out in front of us. And there's a bull running into us. And... immediately it's like, get the camera on, get rolling. And I remember at like 28 yards or 25 yards or something, the bull's running right at you.
Mm-hmm.
And you pull back, and he just all of a sudden locks up and looks right at you. He sees you draw, and he just stops. And before you can even like really get to full draw, he turns, wheels, takes off. And I know at that time you were like, you know, probably feeling a little bit like, ah, that was too aggressive. I should have let him, you know, shouldn't let him get behind a tree. Should have let him not be looking at me, whatever, you know, a little less like he's coming right at me, draw. So then we go to New Mexico in 19. And you are, good night, people trying to run into me.
Watch that transit van.
And so you are hunting a really great unit. And the first afternoon we took forever to get back there because it's so far into just wild blue yonder, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we backpack way in. We get in there. The first night we get in there, there's bulls bugling right up on the hill. We take off up there, and there we get into the mix of one single cow and two big old monster bulls fighting. We can't really see them. But all of a sudden, one of them emerges like he's just one. And he is probably the biggest bull that I will ever see in person.
I'm realizing when somebody has that a tag. Too. I think so.
When,
I mean,
you know, I've seen some big ones like in Rocky Mountain National Park and stuff. But like when somebody has a tag and I'm hunting with them or film with them, that is maybe the biggest bull I will ever
see.
The
more elk I see, the more I realize how big that bull was.
Yeah. He's a giant. He's an absolute unreal giant.
It's scary how big he is.
Yeah. Mm. So this bull... I can't remember exactly how this played out. I probably could watch the video again. This is another video on our channel. But you hit a call. We snuck in on these things.
Yeah.
And you hit a call at one point, and
they
come to us.
He chases his cow up the hill.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I can't let this thing get away. So I just hit one little
yeah. Mm-hmm. And they both come to us.
Yeah.
And the cow comes kind of to our left. We're kind of caught out in the open. We weren't expecting to have to make that call like that real quick. So the cow comes over. And hangs out right, I mean, she's like 15 yards from us. And the bull comes around this brush line, and you draw when he comes out. And then he stops and stares right at us, facing us. And because we're kind of out in the open. And it looks great from my angle. You're slightly off to the right from me, and there's just the worst oak tree on planet Earth is sitting there just covering all the vitals up to the antlers, right?
Yep.
You don't get a shot. At one point, the bull bugles, and a just lion's roar of a bugle that's epic, that haunts our dreams. And I remember you saying after the encounter, you didn't get a shot there. And he finally, you came to the point where you were holding for so long that you let down unwillingly even, and the bull runs off. And I remember you saying, I should have just... took two steps to the left or whatever whenever he bugled and his eyes rolled back in his head and shot him in the chest at 20 yards or whatever. And so I'm thinking about these two instances that are different, right? One is like too aggressive. One is too conservative.
Uh-huh.
And then now you're telling me in this instance, again, kind of this, you feel a little bit guilty about being so conservative. Do you think that... if you say you drew this exact tag again and you went back in there.
Please, let me do that.
Do you feel like truly try to put yourself in this situation where you're...
telling me.
Yes, you. put yourself honestly in this situation. Honestly, what would you do in those the similar situations again where bulls are raked in, they stop at 50 and you don't have a shot. Are you truly walking up 10 yards or 10 steps to get that shot, do you think? Or... is that dependent on what time of the hunt it is? If it's later or whatever, if it's earlier, you might be more conservative. Yeah. Or what do you think?
I think there's a lot to that question, which is probably why you asked it, because podcasting is about long answers, right? Yeah. I think that let me start with the shorter answer. The more encounters you have, the better your chances are killing an elk. So I think that that's one of the things that comes into play in this situation where it's just like, I'm just going to have to make sure I have a lot of encounters. And that's how you end up coming out on top in these situations, right? So, mm-hmm. like, if you do play it conservative, you better be hoping that you see more elk.
Sure.
And I felt like I was going to see a lot of elk mm-hmm. on this trip. So there's that aspect of it. And kind of the end of the story will tell you kind of how I progressed in this, but I don't know if I would push, like, in the moment. I think I'm just a little bit more conservative than what I even think I am. If that, that kind of didn't make any sense. I think I am, and this, of course, is in the hunting realm, I'm super liberal when it comes to other things, guys. Y'all probably know that about me. But anyway, in the hunting space, I think I feel like I'm a pretty aggressive guy, but I actually probably make some fairly conservative decisions. And that might be just me getting a little older, too. But I also think it's because I'm a whitetail hunter. Yeah. I think that whitetail give you shots. And, like, you see a deer from a tree at, like, 35 yards, you don't have a shot. Like, you just don't really force it because he's going to turn broadside or do something, you know? Like, an elk, it's kind of like they don't. It's kind of like you better make your shot happen.
He's walking a line, and he's walking it fast.
That's right. Yeah. They one step for an elk is over a yard, you know, so it happens quick, man, especially when they're rutting. I mean, that's probably the difference, too. Like, first season, whenever they're kind of starting the rut, they're liable to be just walking around just doing elk stuff and eating, whereas, like, that big one we were just talking about, he came down, he had a hot cow, was getting molested by a younger bull, and heard us raking, ran down the hill and just destroyed the cedar right in front of us. And I thought, okay, he as soon as he's done with that, he's going to take three steps up and look down here, and I'm going to shoot him in the chest at 40 yards. Like, I was high. I thought he was dead. And then as soon as he's done raking, he looks up the hill, sees this good 5-point messing around with his cows, and goes, and just takes off chasing them. Did you see that?
I heard it, yeah.
It was stupid.
Oh, it made me sick to my stomach, dude. Gosh.
Yeah, that was bad. He was a gorilla body, too.
He was a gorilla-sounding sucker.
He's bad at the bone.
Yeah.
And throughout all this, I kind of learned some stuff. So, does that answer your question? Like,
yeah, I think
it's
so.
It's kind of like a little situational, too.
And it's just hard, man, when they're, like, there, and you just need a couple of steps.
Yeah.
And there's I don't know, especially, like, in the situation there in New Mexico and, you know, a few years back. That was, like, all he needed to do was turn and walk to his cow.
Yeah.
And so you're like, I'm going to be patient, and this is going to happen. This will happen, right? And he sits there long enough just doing the antelope stare before and after bugling that, like, not to mention, dude, he bugled it, like, 2 minutes in or whatever.
Yeah.
So you're already kind of, like, losing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then just if you thought that lions don't exist in New Mexico, like, this bull's scream and growl will change your mind. I mean, it's just like it. I'm telling you, I was shaking so bad, and I'm holding the camera. And somehow you can't really see it. I was holding that steady enough. But
another thing, too, at that situation in our lives, like, that was the craziest encounter with an animal I'd ever had.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'd shot 2 bull elk by that point in time, but they weren't near that close, near that big, near that fired up. And, like, I'm looking at something, I don't know how big he is at that point in my life. Now looking, it's like, this bull might push Boone and Crockett.
Yeah.
I'm looking at that thing 20 yards, and I'm rattled. More than, like, I wouldn't admit it then, but, like, looking back, like, I was rattled.
I was running the camera and rattled, dude.
So, like, decisions are tough to make whenever you got that going on.
Yep.
And it's still, I was like, just like what you said, though, it's like, okay, what I know about animals is he's going to, like, take, like, this nervous half step and kind of look at me from the side, and I'm going to put it behind his shoulder and smoke him.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he just wheels out and goes. And
I mean, he was comfortable. He didn't bugle without being totally comfortable.
So here's the thing I have to add to that.
Okay.
I noticed something on this trip. The last hunt, I legit passed a satellite bull because we were after a big bull. And that's the thing you do when you're dumb. I'm fine with the decision. It was fun. It was cool. I called in this satellite bull, and he was like 80 yards across a big opening, and I could have pushed down, or I could have even taken the shot. 80's kind of far. But he was bugling, and there was a dinosaur about 200 yards down the hill that I really wanted to kill. So I told Eric, I said, hey, next time he bugles, we're just going to run. past him. And Eric looks at me like I got three eyes, you know. And he gets like, what? Because I just really felt like we were going to be pushing it to try to kill that one. There's one down in cover that I felt like we had a really good chance at killing because he was the dominant bull, too. All that to say is that bull was bugling the whole time, knew something was fishy. And he did something, not on the same level, but something that that same bull did, that that giant one did. And at the beginning of his bugle, he goes, do you remember that?
Yeah.
Has that little thing at the front?
Yeah.
I think that, like, that's a little tiny indicator. I don't know for sure, but I've never heard one do it except that big bull and that satellite bull. And I think it's a, I'm kind of nervous or what's going on.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's an intimidating thing. I don't know, but he did a little like, and you yeah. know, like I've been close to quite a few of them now that are bugling like crazy, and I've only heard it twice, and it's both of those times it was times when the bull was like, "What is that over there?"
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so it's interesting.
I kind of wonder if there's something to it.
Yeah.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where Land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to Land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years, and not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. It's just, I feel like I'm in the same boat with you, Eric. It's like, it's hard to... I mean, you can go and be aggressive, I guess, in a unit where there's a bunch of bulls too. Like you, just as you, as well as you could be conservative and make it happen, you could also be aggressive knowing you got another shot. Mm-hmm. So, I guess the way to learn what's best is to be in places there's a bunch of bulls.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think that was, I mean, you knew this from the get go, but my plan on this hunt was to go try to kill a big elk because I knew there was some around. There's a lot of smaller elk around. If you went in there with the intention of, I've never killed a bull before and I want to kill one, I think you could go be real aggressive and kill one, like, pretty effectively.
I kind of wonder, like, if you could test out some of that, your theories and thoughts on, you know, you were telling me about the raking being kind of like a boundary set.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be cool to, you know, like, especially if you had, like, a younger bull that came in and kind of did something like that. Like, something that was maybe just under what you really wanted to leave there with on that day.
Yeah.
Then to test that stuff and to see, like, is this, you know, can I actually get into range of this dude while he's just eyes rolled back raking this tree right here, you know?
Yeah. And that's where you're at a disadvantage when you're not in-state guy because you like just don't have that whole, well, I'm going to play with this one. You know, you talk about this whitetail. Like you said, throughout your life, you spent a lot of time around does at a feeder when you were young, right? And you got to mess with them a little bit.
Well, yeah.
And kind of learn, like, what they pick up on and all that.
Yep.
And
how much they can hear, what they can see, what they're going to do when they feel like they have seen you, and how they're going to behave, and a second look that they're going to give you, you know, and
all
that
stuff.
We
don't get to do that with elk.
No.
It's like, if you have an opportunity, you better be making the most of it. And it's kind of weird, too, because, you know, that calling thing that we do on OTC sometimes where you just have the party and the elk kind of hopefully show up. It takes them a long time. I don't think that would work at all where I was this time. I mean, you might call in a 4-point or something, but you don't really want to do that. I didn't, at least, you know. Like, there was a nice young 5-point, huge fronts, like, but young bull, you know, kind of thin. One night that just was wanting to come in so bad, and I just kind of, like, put the bugle tube up because I was like, well, I want him to ease off so we can get out of here and not spook him and his cows too much so we can go chase that big one, you know. But, like, that would be a great bull to experiment with and mess around with and see just what you can make one do.
How many – what percentage of bulls did you rake? Do you feel like you pretty much raked in versus you called in or bugled in? I mean, was there ever a time that you – when you raked one in that you didn't call at all?
The one that I shot at and had the deflection, we didn't call to him at all. And then there's this other thing too of communication that was lacking a little bit, between me and the raker. Whereas, and I think this messed us up twice potentially. That bull that would be somebody raking, and then the bull we raked in would like rage a tree and then give a challenge bugle, and I would challenge back. And he would get fired up, but then as soon as that bugle was over, he'd hear the raking down the hill again, and he'd be like, oh, there's two bulls over there. And I'm thinking, this is what he's thinking. He's like, oh, there's two bulls over there. I'm not messing with that. I'm going to get my butt whooped. You know, even, you know, the king of the mountain doesn't want to mess with two at once.
Right.
So I think that kind of messes it up a little bit. But on the last night, I was trying to kill that dinosaur, and I just straight up called him in. He was with his cows, and I was doing the whole excited estrus kind of mew thing and giving him the business with the bugle call. And they were weird because he had cows. You know, everybody's just, like, really excited. And here's something I'm noticing, too. I don't know how this works across the U.S., but I've only hunted the Southern Rockies. And I think that if you want to kill a bull, the 15th through the 19th is, like, an awesome time for that. Even earlier than that, probably, because everybody's kind of doing their own thing a little bit and they don't have the social structures worked out. But if you want to be there for the Bugle Fest, the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, like, it is insane. That just turns on. I mean, we saw it, like, in a matter of 2 days, it went from, like, a 4 to 8.5. I mean, it was crazy the last 2 days.
Man, it's wild. It's crazy to me how tight the rut windows are on elk.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand why, because it's very similar to the tighter rut windows that you see in deer at northern latitudes, you know, because of the harsher climate and the need for the fawns to drop at the right time and that kind of thing. And I would assume also just, you know, with so many predators in the mountains, in the Rockies, that it's probably advantageous to have everything drop at the same time, too, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's actually a concept that's called, I can't remember what it, but it's like a, it's not a theory, but it's like a, this is something principle of like, it's a, like a mass fawn drop principle or something that animals participate in, like wildebeest. They all have their young at like the exact same time. That way, they know they're going to feed predators. So they don't know it, but God made them where they like feed predators on a really high level, or they just overwhelm them. That way there is survival of the fawn crop or the calf crop or whatever. So it's kind of, it's a neat thing.
I'm trying to look that up, but I can't. It's a hard thing to search.
Come on, Jamie.
But yeah, that's you know, potentially, but it is fascinating to me that, like,
Google doesn't like to do Jeopardy. They don't like you to give them answers and then give you the question. So that doesn't work as very good on Google.
But yeah, that's just it's always it kind of is something that's very odd to me because I don't live there and I don't see it just turn on and light up like that. But you hear about it all the time, you know.
After this trip, like you do this and you look at the last time that I hunted a really good unit. I'm not saying I won't go for the whole season, but you almost tire yourself out so much on the 15th or the 19th that you're not fully equipped to do the 20th through whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like it's we were talking about it quite a bit on the way home, and maybe you could – so there's this thing when you first show up, you just think you have to walk for like miles and miles and miles because you're in the mountains and you're trying to kill elk. But if you could – like meter it a little bit and just take a TC, you know, maybe look for a big bull and move in on him if you found him or whatever, but just kind of save your legs a little bit for like the 18th or 19th, then you could, I feel like you'd be a little bit better equipped to be there ready to rock and roll. And even, I would even go so far as to say, if you didn't have a, like, you know, 9 vacation days or whatever, like, I would be okay missing the 15th, 16th, 17th just to make sure I was there through the 20s because it is a rage.
That would be fun. I would love that. I kind of joked at the beginning of this thing that I hate elk hunting, but really I just haven't had great experiences elk hunting. And I think that, you know, there is that where you have certain days that you can have that in certain areas that you can have that.
And that's true too, man. I think that this hunt was a hunt that is very visual. So, you know, we go to Colorado and you're just hunting the spruce and the aspens. And it's like, if you don't hear them, you don't know they're there.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
But out here, it's like, even on days when we weren't hearing bugles, we were watching elk the whole time. There was one time we sat in this valley. We were on this like little glass knob that kind of went out into the middle. And I think we could see 5 different groups of elk at once. We could probably see like 45 elk at one time.
That's cool.
It was awesome. I mean, you know me, I like to get an eye full, man. I was all about it.
Dude, I bet. That's cool, man. Yeah, that would be fun. I would love that. I mean, you know, the pronghorn stuff was fun, but I always said, like, if, you know, if I'm chasing stuff all day, then I'm pretty happy. And I think with pronghorn, that's kind of where I was at. I feel like I never really was out of the game for too long on the pronghorn thing because you got, it's 3 miles, but at least I can be hunting and I'm truly going after something that's a target, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I could get after that and have fun.
Dude, you would have loved this. This is way more up your alley as far as, like, the action stuff goes.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have been all about this hunt.
Maybe one day. Maybe. It's been, let's see. It has been now 12 and will be 13 next years since I have drawn a New Mexico tag. That is rough going, man. I put in for some pretty high odds, fairly high odds elk units over the years, too.
And we thought that we were going to draw a different state this year, too. We like felt really good about our chances, and it didn't happen. Yeah. So, that drawing stuff is... It's tough, man.
It's depressing a little bit.
Yeah, we had a buddy go kill an OTC bull this year, you know, and I've like said I'm never doing that again. But I don't know, maybe there's some opportunity.
He kills everything. Dude.
He's a killer.
He is.
Makes
man.
Him mad. You know, it's funny. He didn't have. He was the only Sasquatch in the woods that day. He didn't have 3 of them following him around.
Yeah, that's it.
It kind of makes a difference.
He almost didn't find that bull though, too.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it is.
Dude, elk are tough. They are tough animals. It's a giant animal, like. They are just not whitetail, you know. They are just completely just it just ain't even fair to call them a deer sometimes, you know. Like they're just a crazy, crazy big. And that so for the podcast, I'm gonna let y'all in on kind of the last evening's events. And this will all be out on video at some point in time, either on MeatEater or on the Element. We're not sure really where this lands yet. But so I had that deflection early in the trip, and then the last evening I did get aggressive. It wasn't the last evening of the season, but it ended up being the last evening of my hunt because I got to chasing that dinosaur bull, called him in to 63, and took a shot, and it was like, felt so good. But I think I must have hit the grass in front of him or something on the range, because I hit low, and makes me real sad.
Because you would have smoked that grass, though.
I smoked that grass. I mean, just like, not, you know, not in like the 420 kind of smoke the grass kind of way, you know.
Oh, but yeah, different kind. Different smoke.
Yeah, but
different grass too.
Yeah, and Eric got really good footage of it. It's a shame that I didn't hit the bull better, but you could tell from the shot. Like right away, I was like, I think I smoked him, but. You know, I just was excited and felt good about it. And then got to looking at the footage, and that arrow was really low. And I was like, man, after watching the footage, I was like, there's no way that I hit that bull in the vitals. But get up there, and there's blood right away, so it's kind of encouraging. But followed blood for a while, at like 200 yards, and he wasn't dead yet. So I was like, okay, we need to leave and come back tomorrow just in case. And did some calling of some friends and some other people, like tracking dog person, and they were pretty much everybody was like at the consensus of, if he's not dead yet, there's a pretty low chance that you hit anything vital. And one guy even was a outfitter in there who also had a tracking dog, and he was like, man, I just ran my dog like 10 hours today for somebody else's, and your track's kind of old, so I don't want to take your money just to come out there when I know he was being really nice. He wasn't being a jerk. Mm-hmm. But he was like, there's a real good chance you hit that thing low on the brisket and they bleed like crazy, it seems like, but they're fine. So all that knowledge compiled with, we blood trailed this thing for half a day, grid searched another half a day, came back the next morning, which is, you know, like the third day, and did some grid searching and looking for birds and didn't find anything. And that morning heard bugles that sounded like him, and pretty much assumed that he was not lethally hit, which really just hurts my heart. I feel like I got shot in the brisket too after all that, man. It's not something that I like to do, and that's where like the whole juxtaposition of conservative versus aggressive comes up. It's like, okay, well, if I was a little more conservative and hadn't taken that 63-yard shot, then maybe I kill that bull the next day at 40 or something. You know, I don't know, you know, but that I felt you can only do, how do you say this? Hunting is instinctual, or at least it is for me. And it is for a lot of people. And if you are robotic, oftentimes you're going to continue to make the same mistakes over and over again if you think things out too much. Sometimes you just have to be a gamer when it comes to hunting. And, you know, that's how I tend to take my shots. It's just like last year in Nebraska, I shot a deer at 47 yards, and I knew he was dead before I drew my bow. You know, I was just like, oh, this thing, I'm about to smoke this thing, right? And it's an aggressive shot on a whitetail. 47 is a long way, right? And
48.
48, is that what it was?
Don't cut yourself short there.
I couldn't remember. And, I mean, I 10-ringed him. You know, he's just as smoke as it gets, right? And at the same time, like, later in the season, I shot a deer in Oklahoma at 17 yards, you know, and, like, let him get real close. It's just you have to take – what you feel the best about and just seize it. You know, you just have to go after it. And that's how I felt on that shot. Elk's a giant animal. 63 is like well within my effective range, and I'm not blaming it on anything else, but you know, like, I just, who knows what the factor was, whether it's rangefinder, sight, or whatever. I didn't close, and it stinks, because that's, I kind of did the whole tag punch thing. You know, the last morning we were there, I saw a nice young 5-point 100 yards off the road with cows, and, you know, decided to not even try, because I don't think that bull died, but he might die from infection or something. I don't, you know, who knows? You know, I was at the point where I was like, okay, you know, we're quite a few days into this. I wounded one. I'm pretty toast. Like, I have I've done my thing at this point in time. You know what I mean? So, and that's how my hunt ended.
You just gotta make the best decisions you can, man. I'm kind of in life too, man. You make the most wise decisions that you feel like you can make at the time, and sometimes you're gonna be allowed to fail, and you're gonna look back and say, "Well, I'm glad that happened." Actually, a lot of times, you know, if you try to be wise in the future about it too, and think back about truly what you're after and that kind of thing. And I think about that with music stuff a lot, you know, and you can try, man, you make your best decisions, and sometimes you're just sometimes you're just not, you know. Job prayed for his kids, you know, on behalf of his kids, and was a good man, and tried to be a kingdom man, and still had some things go pretty awful for him, you know.
It's
honestly
almost like we're not in control of everything that goes on around here.
Yeah That's right. I mean, he's a wealthy man too, you know.
Yeah.
And couldn't buy his way out of that one.
Yeah.
So I mean, I look to that story a lot because that's an extreme case, you know. When you know we're talking about wounding a deer or an elk, you know, and it means a lot to us. But I said this, and y'all haven't seen this video yet, but I said this about my Neil guy after I shot it, and I was like, you know, sometimes it feels very important that you make this shot on this animal and you kill it, right? But in the whole, like, span of man's time on planet Earth, it ain't that important.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, well, and so, yeah. I mean, compared to some of the things that Job went
and
through or something
you think
like
about,
that, right?
I mean, it was just, I mean, it's straight up, people don't like it, but this straight up trophy hunting when you're hunting bulls, you know, because, like, you can say, you know, Joe Rogan, you know, infamously eats elk, right? He loves it, you know, like he's all about it. But, like, Joe goes and kills a 350 every year, you know, and that's – I wasn't in that realm, right? But I was trying to kill a big bull on this trip.
I mean,
I could
you
have
proved
shot,
that you can go kill a cow every year, right?
That's right. I could have shot, like, 30 cows and a couple spikes on this trip.
Probably
could have
drawn the tag pretty easy,
pretty easy. You know? If you want to draw cow tags, they're out there.
Yeah. Tasty meat.
They're expensive. But anyways, you know, like, that is the truth. And so that kind of lends itself to your point of, like, it's actually not that imperative. Because if it was super imperative that you killed something, you would have shot the first animal that was legal.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't. And it's straight up. Now, my wife was like, "So is this your only elk hunt?" So she loves to eat elk, and I do too.
Well, we may have some people that can hook us up.
Maybe. And I'll tell you what, we're headed north to go kill whitetails, and I love eating whitetail, but especially these ones up here.
Yeah.
They're real tasty.
They are, dude.
They got like a darker meat kind of thing going on, you know.
Corn finished.
Yeah, buddy.
Grass
let's
fed.
Go.
I mean, come on.
Alfalfa bucks.
You know, I have a friend that's also a family member that may have some extra meat, too, that just went up, killed him a giant moose in Alaska DIY. I'm hoping he allows me to use the video on our social, because I think it is cool, and I think some people would like to watch it.
Yeah,
I just
absolutely.
Haven't asked him yet, but I'm sure he will.
Well,
so.
Who knows? I might figure out a way to go, you know, get a Neil Guy meat hunt or something, because that's pretty dang close to elk, too.
Dude, so. I ate Neil Guy burgers the other night.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic.
I bet.
I mean, just, to, you know, could use a little more fat, but. Yeah. As far as the taste, it is so good, man. It's so good. And I added a egg and some breadcrumbs just to help them kind of stay together. And I just did smash burgers, and they were awesome, dude.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's tasty critters we get to chase around. And you and I, right now, as we speak, are headed to go try to reproduce the double. Man,
glad you said the double.
Yeah, yeah, it ain't how it works, man. We can't do any other type of reproduction around
here. That's true.
So I'm pretty excited about it. How about this?
Yeah,
that's a pretty infamous brand of long range attractants.
Don't be telling people.
Yeah, but anyways, thanks y'all for listening to my story. I know it was kind of long and a little bit scattered because it's so many days and. I think that just kind of as a overall like take from the thing is that I'm always trying to be aware of the lesson that God's trying to teach me in things, because I do believe that He works in the believer's life. Like, you know, actively, right? And there's a couple
Romans 8:28
dang,
would say, I believe it's 8:28 would say, for the benefit of.
Yeah. Which benefit doesn't mean enjoyment all the time, in case y'all were wondering.
No, that's right. It means so that one may become more holy.
Sanctification.
Yep.
All that to say is I think that I had a really, really excellent season last year where I killed a cow elk and five whitetails. And I might have been a little too puffed up, as the translation would say. We might have been a little bit too prideful in my abilities, overconfident. I wasn't as in good a shape on this trip as I needed to be, and I can blame that on a lot of things, but that's just the way it is. And that may have affected me in some sense. I also probably thought I was just better than what I am at hunting, and learning some humility is always good, no matter what stage in life you're in. And then also, kind of just from a hunting perspective, I think that people should try to go elk hunt a little bit. Like, even if you're from, like, South Carolina, just go get your OTC tag in Colorado and stomp around in the mountains, because you're just, like, your vitality just increases so much when you get out and do stuff like that.
Man,
like,
we talked about that, too, when you weren't in here earlier,
really?
Man. Yeah. I was talking to Michael and Eric about I was like, man, if you eat some decent food, like just take some meat and some vegetables, right?
Well, yeah.
Tortillas could be, that'd be good too.
Yeah.
And then go just walk.
Uh-huh.
Like outside. It could be in the mountains, or it could be just in the fresh air of, you know, Texas or whatever, on public land, you know, somewhere. Just go to walking and hunting. You could be hunting birds. You could be hunting pheasants, deer, whatever. But get you 2 miles of walking in, and you do that for like a week straight, you're going to be feeling pretty good by the end of that thing.
Guarantee
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you go and walk 11 miles in the mountains on a day, it's going to whoop you pretty good.
Yeah.
But
you
start to get to where all of a sudden your pants are falling off, and you just feel like, you know, great. You're getting fresh air, man. You're getting sunshine, vitamin D.
Your digestion's good, too.
That's right.
The human body's made to walk. That's what, like, we are designed to do, is bipedal animals.
Let's go.
They're not animals, actually. We're different than animals, but bipedal creatures, which I was thinking about this earlier. Creature is a funny word because it's something that is used throughout the scientific realm.
Yeah, I think about this a lot, too.
The root is create. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as in created things,
yep,
creatures. So it's pretty cool to me. But anyways, when you walk, your digestion works way better. So you don't have indigestion as much. You are having more consistent and good bowel movements. Your PPE is low, is what we like to say around here. I don't really know what the...
I'm not sure either how that works. The ratio is not too off.
Yeah,
but we'll just say that.
It's in good shape. So anyways, it just feels good.
Nobody knows what that is.
It's all right, dude. They can draw some inferences.
Okay.
Anyways, it's good to get out and just be a man, you know? Like, it's funny because some of our friends are on TRT or joke about it, how they're going to get on it one day, which is testosterone replacement therapy, which I don't know. I'm sure that there is some legitimate reasons that someone might want to do that. But, man, if you just get out and, like, just do some manly stuff, you're going to get a natural hit of that.
Yeah.
You know, like, looking at these doves flying around now, I kind of get a little TRT.
I got TRT.
Look at all these duckers.
Everywhere.
Golly.
I know.
Is there any public around here?
It's getting more and more, like, every mile.
I know. Goodness gracious. But anyways, I'm feeling pretty vital right now. We're about to go scout out some deer, shoot some big old doves. Anything else we need to talk about?
Greg just released a video, a really cool manly video, where he went out into some really wild country and shot his first mule deer. Y'all need to go check it out. It's on our channel right now. And, you know, if I'm being honest and truthful, it's not the biggest buck you've ever seen, but the hunt is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. There is footage of the big bucks in there. I enjoyed watching it. So, and I would assume a lot of other people would too.
Yeah.
It's a really cool story.
Pretty fast-paced watch too.
Yeah, Greg's a good hunter and gets after it. He's a tough dude. And, you know, didn't even need a shower the whole time he's out there.
That's right.
You know?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah, them boys was some smelly guys whenever they get done with that.
Dude.
But, Yeah, y'all go check that out. Remember to subscribe to the Element YouTube channel if you haven't. Follow us on social. And remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.